Hello and welcome to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact podcast. My name is Matt Barrios. I'm a husband, dad, researcher, writer, and coach, and I am exploring global perspectives on home. What does it take for a person to set up their home for consistent growth, meaningful connection with other people, and to really amplify their impact in the world all around them? That's what I'm trying to explore by interviewing experts and everyday people all around the world. And I'm having a blast having these wonderful long conversations with people about this topic. Today, I get to continue that whole investigation, that whole exploration with Dr. Gina Simmons-Schneider. She is a licensed psychotherapist and executive coach. And I get to pick her brain today about the intersection between home and mental wellness, relational connection. And I'm so excited for today's episode. So, Dr. Schneider, thank you so much, first of all, for being a part of this exploration, this research, and maybe as a way to kind of get into a little bit about you and everything, what are some of the ways that you set up your home to be a place for mental wellness and relational connection?
Thank you so much, Matt, for inviting me. And I really have prioritized with my husband making our home work more for us. I think when I was younger, it was all about the expectations that you think a home should have. And as we have lived for decades in our home, it has now been shaped into a place that really reflects what we value. And I think that's sort of matched the evolution of us raising kids, launching children, and then having the home to ourselves, and then having a place for our kids to return to for family dinners and things like that. So we have this deck that looks west, and in our community, we get hot air balloons that come from the ocean, and we're a few miles in from the ocean, but we look out at the ocean on a clear day. We can see glimmers of the ocean out there. Wow. And so we get to watch hot air balloons, and we pretty much every Friday evening we'll watch the sunset, and we'll have a little bit of appetizers. And we will kind of relax and contemplate the week we've just had. And it's this outdoor space that's very comfortable because it's a pretty big deck, so we can have family out there with us if we have them here, or it could just be my husband and I. And then the other thing, and that's a big wellness place because since the pandemic, we have been providing most of our trainings and our psychotherapy services from our home offices. Have an office outside of the home, but it's a very expensive paperweight right now, or sure. Storage facility,
yeah.
Because most of the time we're seeing people virtually. So since we've done that, it's been really nice to be able to take breaks and go outside and look west and take deep breaths and get a little sunlight, because I know from my research in neuropsychology and neuroscience that sunlight, especially morning sunlight, really does help set our circadian rhythms and helps our hormones balance so that we have the daytime hormones kind of kicking in with the early morning sunlight. And that helps us sleep better at night, because then, you know, melatonin kicks in at night to tell us it's dark, time to go to bed. Uh-huh. So I've noticed that since we've really been living out on our deck more, that it's really contributed significantly to our sense of well-being.
That sounds like, as you painted that picture of these hot air balloons coming in from the ocean and you're watching from this beautiful large deck, I was like, that sounds idyllic. That sounds so beautiful. And I'm so glad you have a space like that for taking these breaks from work, because I certainly know the screen digital existence. It's not conducive to human life when it comes down to it. So those sorts of moments just sound like really, really needed rest and breaks from everything. And you know, I want to dig a little bit more into like this sort of research that you have been doing as a licensed psychotherapist. And did you say neuropsychology? Was that the term that you used?
Yes, my book Frazzled Brain uses neuropsychology research to look at how to reduce anger, anxiety, and stress. So I call that sort of three-headed monster of anxiety, anger, and stress, irritability, and stress, and anxiety. I call it frazzle brain because it affects our concentration, makes us feel this pressure to get things done, but also this sense of time urgency and a bit of fatigue all at the same time, you know. And so people sort of intuitively know that feeling of being frazzled.
Yes.
And the brain part of it is really about how it does impair our judgment, reasoning, and our thinking. It narrows our thinking. And so one of the things I teach in Frazzled Brain is coping skills to reduce stress. And so that's one of the reasons I was really attracted to your particular podcast and your message, because the interesting ways you talk about making home work for you and how that can be such a great place to de-stress. And it's a little bit different for everyone. You know, some people are comfortable with messiness, you know. In fact, it stimulates creativity and makes them feel better. And a lot of people are very uncomfortable with messiness and like neatness and tidiness in every space. And some people are a little bit of a mix, but you know, I think also adapting to working online, we move less, and so that's one of the things that we've tried to do is move up and down our stairs and move outside. And the other thing the neuropsychology research shows is that we actually breathe differently when we from our normal life when we are working virtually. And normally we will unconsciously do this sort of automatic sigh where we just breathe out through our nose about once an hour. Mm. We'll just, you know, exhale completely through our nose. Mm. And you can do that. And that's one of the quickest ways to de-stress is to inhale and exhale fully, like a sigh, like you're just sighing, you know.
Yeah.
Through your nose.
You guys are saying that. I just like did a quick little bit of that as I was listening to you, and I was just like, "Wow, that is actually true. That just worked this moment for me." So that's really an incredible thing. I've never heard anybody mention before.
Isn't that
it's so interesting? Simple.
Yeah, and we would normally do that without thinking about it if we're walking around in our day or. You know, working with other people and having a conversation but something about being on camera, you know, when we're working virtually, it makes us breathe differently. So I've become much more conscious of bringing that normal breathing back in and, you know, making sure that I exhale completely, and also getting up and moving is very important too.
I could see how all of those things from breathing and movement would help this this frazzle brain thing that you are mentioning. I want to connect that to something that you said earlier too. You said that part of your evolution, your growth in your home had to do with letting go of some of the shoulds around home. This is what home should be for me. What connections, if any, do you see between those shoulds around home and perhaps some of these stressors that lead to frazzle brain?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, we call that shoulding on yourself. that whenever we're in the shoulds, we are typically judging ourselves and others. And as soon as we are judging ourselves and others, we are tightening up our body, and our nervous system sort of tightens up and our thinking sort of closes down. And it's, you know, when we live, I think when we're younger, we live a lot according to other people's expectations, right? Your mom and dad want you to get good grades in school, or, you know, your teacher wants you to do this and your pastor wants you to do that. And, So, and then your peers have these expectations that you should behave in certain ways or dress in certain ways, right? So as we get older, I think it is a process of really becoming more true to who we are, mm-hmm. and more becoming of our unique individual selves, as yeah. opposed to the pressure to conform. And one of the ways we've done that is over the years, we collect musical instruments because we play musical instruments in our family, and we've always had them. But after we played, we would sort of put them away, and we have a living room and a dining room, and, you know, it needs to stay a living room and a dining room because when people come over, they expect a living room and a dining room in this place, right?
Interesting.
And when we had kids and, you know, they had their friends over, it was nice to have a dining room table. Well, we decided we really don't entertain enough to have a dining room table. I mean, we may have like three or four dinner parties a year around holidays, and we can bring out folding tables and transform our music room into a dining room if we need to. But we got rid of the dining room table, and we now have all of our musical instruments. We have drums, we have guitars, bass guitars, we have mandolin, ukulele,
wow.
percussion instruments. And so when people walk into our home in the entryway, there is a couple of couches to sit on, but there are guitar stools and things to play with, and there's a piano.
Yeah.
And it literally is a music room.
Wow.
And it has really honored how we want to live. And we have friends over, and our friends' children even like will grab percussion instruments or they'll play the guitar, and we will play music. And it's so much more life affirming for us because that's how we kind of want to live. And we do have a kitchen table that we can have like six people around and, you know, still yeah. have dinner and, you know, or do something outside, you know, in the backyard. But we don't really need a dining room table. And so I think that was one way we got rid of the shoulds and just sort of embraced the way we live and the way we want to live. And it's been really fun. And it's been fun for our kids when they come back. And we have two little grandsons, too. And they love the drums, the hand drums, and they'll pound on them and shake the little shakers and the maracas and all the different fun toys that they get to play with. And it puts a smile on people's faces. And, you know, but it's certainly not typical what you would see in our neighborhood in that room, you know.
Yeah. That sounds so wonderful to be able to have that easy access to music. It speaks to me as a musician. We have a piano in the corner of the living room over there, and I grew up, you know, playing music around and everything. And I certainly like love the idea of just having that easy access to music, and that also being a place of connection for the family. If you're all a musical family, how fun to get to have that to share in and that dedicated space to remind you we can go do this together. That sounds so fun. I'm really curious if there's, I don't expect you to know everything, but is there any sort of like psychology of music kind of layer to the sort of investigation you've done in your research? Are there any things that you've noticed?
Yeah,
there?
I mean, we do know that music education, learning to play a musical instrument at a young age does improve math skills. It improves learning. And we know that trained musicians have many more neural connections in their brain because music, when you play music, you are using your hands typically, and sometimes your hands and feet, right? Uh-huh. If you're playing yeah. drums. I try to play drums. I can play a basic rock beat, but you know, I'm not really a drummer, but
sure.
more guitar and bass. But
but
we do know that, you know, you're using your auditory cortex, right? Your hearing. If you're reading music, you're using your visual cortex as well. You're using your motor cortex, which is the back of your brain, and they're all interacting, right? Wow. And so, and then if you're really playing music, you're connected to your emotional memory. You're connected mm-hmm. to, because music really is the language of emotion, and a lot of art forms really help express feelings that are hard to put into words, right? Yeah. And so when you have all of those connections, that connectivity going on in the brain, that does correlate with improving your intelligence. So even if children don't ever become a professional musician and it's just a fun hobby, it's really a worthwhile part of an educated person's life to have some music lessons and to learn, you know, to learn how to play, and it provides some strengthening of your neural connections that also helps prevent some of the cognitive decline that can occur in aging. Oh. So it really is healthy for the brain to learn to play a musical instrument. And, you don't have to be good to have fun. You can totally. Just play, you know, yeah. It's called play for a reason. You're right, playing, right?
Right. Oh, I love it. I love it. As, you know, as a musician who has like picked up instruments over time, I think there's some sort of joy in just almost like learning the new language of a new instrument. And obviously, you got to be really horrible at it at first in order to get anywhere with it. And
yeah, nobody starts out good.
I know. And I am still horrible at saxophone. That's just probably going to be how it is for the rest of my life. Right. But that's okay.
You can get a sound out of a saxophone. I'm impressed.
I'm not saying it's a good sound. So currently, you know, you mentioned that you have kids who've grown up, they've moved out of the house. Mm-hmm. What has that transition in your home into, like, you know, being empty nesters or what have you, how has that shifted your take on what home is for and your approach for home?
I think it's been a gradual transition. I think, you know, when the children went to college, they still are coming home in between and or after college, you know, getting their job and then moving out again. Mm-hmm. Now they're all completely launched. And we have a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old grandson. And grandsons, and so it's shifted again, where we now have gone back to needing toddler toys and a toy box, you know, in the family room, and you know, so we have kind of gone backwards in a little bit, you know, and welcoming them, but continuing to have bedrooms where they can come back, and we like that. That's kind of why we haven't downsized, is we like having the whole family come back for holidays and things mm-hmm. like that. And we can accommodate all of them. And so far, as the family continues to grow, it might be a tighter squeeze. But but that's been really, really fun. I mean, there was certainly a painful transition where, you know, the children are leaving and you walk into their bedroom and it's like all empty. And then there was a while there where it was like, okay, are you going to get rid of your stuff? You know, are you going to take your stuff? Yeah. we have all this stuff, and then we have aging parent stuff, you know, sort of in our garage. And as they downsized, and we're having to make all these decisions because we're in that generation where, you know, our parents are aging and downsizing, and our children are still have some of their stuff here. And we've been little by little having them go through it and getting rid of stuff. So that's where we are in terms of, we're still in transition. We still have, like, you know, we go through these purging cycles of deciding what to get rid of. And sometimes it's hard because we have an emotional attachment to certain memories, you know, but you know, it's not needed anymore. Somebody else could make use of that, you know, end table or whatever it is that we don't need anymore. Absolutely. So that's sort of where we are evolving with our home. And, you know, continuing to want it to be a family gathering place, but also really serve my husband and I most of the time. To just, you know, after work, we can go down there. He'll pick up the electric guitar. I'll get on the drums. We'll just de-stress for a few minutes and then make dinner. And it's been really, really fun.
That sounds like an amazing way to end your work day. You know, like, is this a normal rhythm for you on a daily cadence?
It is, unless there's some thing going on. Or we have somebody in our house. Our daughter's here now, staying here, working from here for a few days. So it's nice having her here. And sometimes we will play music or sing together. She plays too. So it depends. If she's here, we might do something with her. If she's gone, then it'll just be my husband and I. But yeah, most days it's kind of something we'll do, even if it's just for like 10 minutes, depends on, you know, how much time we have. But it's such a nice de-stressor, and to just switch gears from working with people, and a lot of the people we work with are suffering and we're dealing with strong, painful emotions. And then to go from that into just being in our body, playing music, and thinking about making sounds, you know, pleasing sounds as much as we can.
Yeah, sure.
You know, that sort of really helps transition from the work day to being off work.
It sounds almost like a ritual of like detachment or something like that, where you have to kind of let things, you be grounded in something, let something move through you, kind of come off of you so that you're not carrying it into the rest of your evening, it sounds like.
I like the way you describe that. It is what it feels like. So a lot of times I like playing the drums to do that because it's so primal. Like when I play guitar, I'm thinking about song lyrics and I sing. So I love doing that too. But then I'm kind of more picky. If I'm in a certain feeling space, I want to have a song that sort of matches my feeling or whatever. Whereas with drums, I don't have to have any particular feeling. I just have to be with the rhythm. And so that's been a really fun, thing. It's just such a primal thing. Yes. To just be in rhythm, right? To be in rhythm. And not be thinking in words, because we think in words all day when we're communicating, you know.
And it's nice to kind of like get to this almost pre-linguistic, you know, layer to who we are, and just kind of bang things out for a while. And I've had this theory for a while after playing in bands for years. I really feel like the drums kind of play the bones of a person, you know, like it just gets really deep down there. And something about the bass kind of gets that deep, resonant, like gut and heart inner of a person. And I'm probably a bassist first and foremost when it comes down to it.
You are?
Yeah.
Well, I wish we could jam together and have you over.
If I could
let
jam
us know
with
if
Dr.
you're
Schneider.
In San Diego. Well, yeah, I mean,
that'd be incredible.
We would have fun. We would have fun.
So much fun. Oh my yes. goodness. Well, rain check for that. I would love to find if there's some way we could make that happen.
If you're in San Diego, look us up.
Okay, we'll do. Yeah, and if you're in San Francisco, me and my wife will have to be hospitable to people as well. So we don't have a music room, unfortunately. We can host
you. But you have a piano.
We have a piano. That's a big deal. And a guitar. So, we could make something happen. But at any rate, a fun little kind of connection moment there. To kind of like turn the corner just a little bit here, I'm interested if you'd kind of like think through with me your home when it is kind of gone sideways, things aren't working so well. Could you describe that for me? Like what does home gone sideways look or feel like for you?
It's usually if something breaks.
Okay.
Like an appliance or... like my daughter came and brought her laundry. It was funny because she goes, "Mom, can I bring my laundry?" You know, and I'm like, "Sure." Well, she overloaded the washing machine, and and it took like five. You know, had to take everything out. It's stopped, and we had to balance the load, and and so fortunately it didn't break the washing machine, but I was like, this is not an industrial washer. So you have to just put a normal size load in here, a smaller size load. But that was kind of funny. That wasn't super a good example of things going sideways, but I think, yeah, if there's a plumbing leak, or we've certainly been through where our house had to be replumbed, completely replumbed our house. And so fortunately that happened pre-COVID and when we were working from home, so it didn't disrupt our workday. But now, since we've been working from home, I just don't like having workers in my house, and you have the noise and the disruption and something not working, and it just sort of throws me off my my game a little bit.
I believe it, especially doing the sort of work in psychotherapy that you do. I mean, that is so much attentive, focused, pay attention, can't be distracted really as you're doing that kind of work. And so to have somebody, clanging on a pipe with a wrench would definitely throw things off. So that makes a lot of sense. Currently, this morning, I was taking our daughter to daycare, and our car didn't start. And the battery's dead.
Oops.
And probably just let a light left a light on in it. And I tell you what, it threw my whole morning off, because it's just like, okay, now I got to take care of this. And I had to reschedule a meeting and, walk her to daycare instead of drive her to daycare, and all of these kinds of things. And it is wild how much, especially when things get thrown off in our, that we rely on, thrown off in our home and we rely on them. Really kind of literally throw a wrench in plans and expectations and so on. Yeah.
That's one of those external stressors that can trigger frazzle brain. If you already feel pressured, you've got a busy workday planned, you've got to get your daughter to school on time, and here's this external unpredictable thing that happens, your car won't start, and that causes a delay, and then you have, all these accommodations to make. And so that's kind of a lot of what my book is about too, is how do we roll with what life throws at us? Mm. What are some of the coping skills that can help us really slow down, not catastrophize, recognize that most of these things are not life-threatening, so we don't need to have this rush of cortisol, the stress chemicals running through our veins, that we can be calm and cope. And I think a big part is shifting our expectations that everything's supposed to work. Yeah. I've sort of changed and shifted in my in actually thanking my car for starting. There's a little gratitude in my head, oh, I'm so glad you're working. Thank you, car. I appreciate it. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to change your oil, but it's almost like, I don't take it for granted. And when I don't take it for granted, I appreciate it more. But also when I don't take it for granted, I'm less likely to overreact. If something does break, I sort of see that as, it's normal when you've lived in a house for decades for things to break, or it's normal when you leave the light on in the car that the battery will die down, and that's okay, right? These are just, first world problems, right? So
seriously,
but I think
that's a valuable perspective that I really need to learn, especially even as you're talking about being thankful, grateful for when the things that we expect to run like normal are running like normal. That feels like a real next level kind of gratitude to cultivate versus I'm grateful for the surprise. No, I'm grateful for the normal. That's a very helpful shift in perspective. What do you think that cultivating that kind of gratitude at home could look like in relationships or how you go about your day?
Well, it's interesting, people stop seeing what's around them, and you don't see the pictures on the wall anymore after you've hung them for a while. You just go straight to whatever it is you're trying to do in your house. And a lot of times we don't stop and just appreciate, you know, like we have some pictures, some prints we got when we were in Paris. And so sometimes I will intentionally like look at them and remember like, oh, this is not a real Renoir, but I've got a little Renoir print, you know, yeah. And it's really pretty. And I remember how good it felt to just look at that painting in the real world. And I remember an experience. And so there are moments like that where you can amplify the good that's already there. I have an exercise in Frazzlebrain called Amplify the Good. And it's very simple, but I just have people like close their eyes and do some deep breathing to settle down. And then think about someone you feel deep feelings of caring for. And just really imagine them as if they were there before you in as much detail as possible. And then imagine and think about all of the things that you admire and appreciate about this person, whether it's their, you know, sense of humor, their trustworthiness, their intelligence, their talents. And just think about in as much depth as possible what you really care about in this person, what you really love and appreciate. And it's a closed eye exercise. And then when you open your eyes, look around you and look at everything around you that you appreciate. Is there a pretty plant? Is there a painting or a picture or color on the wall? Because I think for most of us, or many of us, I hear this from a lot of people, when we look at our home, we see the crack in the ceiling or the thing that needs spot needs to be repainted or the broken tile, which a lot of times other people completely overlook. They just look at the floor and it looks pretty, you know. But we notice all these flaws, but we don't stop to amplify what we do appreciate. And so when we take time to tune into something we really love and then look around, people, when they do this exercise, are often surprised at how much more they see in their environment that they had been overlooking. And sometimes people will even say, oh, I forgot, you know, my grandmother's vase was sitting there on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And I love that vase. And, you know, I remember that vase when she gave it to me. And, you know, and so that... we do know that amplifying the good that's already there, we still have works in progress. Anybody who owns a home or lives in a home has works in progress, things they're trying to make better, spaces they need to furnish or something, right? And so, but we can look around and appreciate what we do have. And what that does is it does reduce inflammation in our body and it lowers stress chemicals in our body. And it has health benefits when we do that.
That's so cool. I mean, I think that kind of like, slowing down to be grateful and find, I think it's such an interesting way. It's kind of building momentum of gratitude with like maybe somebody first internally in your own mind with somebody who, you know, you're just so treasure. I thought about my wife or my daughter, you know, those would be the people that come to mind. And then, I think it is interesting the way things feel hidden in plain sight, because they become so normal that they're the water we're swimming in and we don't pay attention to it anymore. Right. You said something that I want to jump on too, which is like the fact that for many of us in our homes, we have these different items, these possessions, you know, these things that have stories behind them or that we really use often and treasure or something like that. I'm curious for you, Dr. Schneider, if there are any, you know, prized possessions that you have in your home.
Well, I think they would have to be... I have a really nice, my first nice guitar, my guild guitar that my grandfather got me for my 21st birthday. It reminds me of him, and he's since passed, long passed. But it reminds me of this special day and, you know, his desire to support me, you know, in my music. And then my husband got me a real upgrade guitar, a beautiful Taylor guitar. for one of my birthdays, and then my drum set. And so those, I look at those three, like I have the guitar that my grandfather got me in my office here, and sometimes I'll just play around on it a little bit between sessions if I get a break. I still love the sound of it. And then in our music room, my husband got me, and he knew that I really always wanted a drum set, but I was always like, oh, when the kids were here and we don't have room for it. And, you know, we don't have space. Sure. And so finally, when we did this, he surprised me with this. And what's really nice about it too, is it's an electronic drum set. So I can put my headphones on and pound away and not disturb anybody at, like, you know, midnight if I feel like it.
Oh, wow, great.
And I don't disturb the neighbors or anything. So, so those are very precious to me because they were really gifts given to me out of love. Hmm. And they're things that have kept on giving joy, yeah. You know, as the years go on, and that's I've great. Learned new songs and, you know, learned new things on those instruments.
It tells me that some of like those valued prized possessions, what they might represent are those like meaningful relationships for you with your grandfather and your husband. They tell that story of a gift given in love and the connection that is there. And it tells the story of like ongoing creativity, the journey of learning instruments and expressing yourself. Like it's always really interesting to hear about the prized possessions of people because it feels like a snapshot into what they value and all of that. Yeah, so that's
exactly. Really cool. It's symbolic, right? It's mm-hmm. It's both a useful way to express creativity, but it's also the thing that feels most loving to me, and I could get choked up thinking about it, is when somebody really sees you and what matters to you, and they give you a gift in alignment with that, you know, it's mm-hmm. so deeply meaningful, right? It's like,
yeah,
there are probably a lot more practical things I needed when I was 21 than a guitar at that time. Maybe it wasn't sure. the most practical, but yeah. you know, that was something that he saw. And then of course my husband seeing, you know, knowing me so well and knowing what that would mean to me, you know,
yeah.
That is where the deeper meaning comes from too. That deeper connection is somebody, mm-hmm. somebody knowing what would delight you and
yes,
making
yes.
that happen.
Really intimately knowing you and knowing like, okay, that, yeah, I love that. This is kind of getting to another area I want to explore because I know one of your expertise is also in relationships and kind of navigating everything from conflict and intimacy and so on and so forth. And maybe thinking of your husband or, you know, your relationship with your kids or, you know, the relationships in your home. What are some of the things that have been really, really helpful, foundational you know, perspectives to take or principles to live by in order to create really great relationships out of your home?
I think one of the things that I feel proud of that my husband and I did is that we talk about it amongst ourselves, that we're a family of individuals, you know, that we respected each child's individual self and tried to help cultivate whatever it was in them that they wanted to develop, right? So we offered them when they were little, you know, lots of different opportunities to try sports or try different activities and things. And I think what I'm most proud of is that we didn't try to make our children fit some preconceived expectation that we had for them. We tried to see what they were curious about and then encourage that, you know. So so I think as a result of that, our children all get along with each other and respect each other because they all have unique talents mm-hmm. and they've developed them and are using them in their work and in their life. And yet we're all really unique, right? And so we enjoy we enjoy the unique contributions when we get together, you know, the unique expertise that my son might have about, because he studied classical music. He's like the real musician in the family. And you know, and our other son who's very philosophical and deep, and then our, you know, daughter who's in the entertainment industry. And so they all bring, you know, some unique perspective of the world, and we can enjoy each other's company. So for me, that was a success, right? Because we weren't, we back to getting rid of the shoulds. That we weren't trying to make them live up to our expectations of them. Mm,
that's huge. And it seems like when there's room for people to be particularized, individualized, like you are a unique person with your own abilities, your own personalities, your own memories, everything like that, it makes sense that that would lead to people being able to show up more fully with one another, have relationships that are not based off of I need to conform or I need to compete. I think that just sounds like a really great gift that you and your husband gave to your children. From like early ages, what were kind of like early ages of particularizing your children and helping them be unique? Like, what did that look like?
I think like we have one son who's, I think, very introverted. So he was always the observer. And he also, even when he was like 6 months old, he would crawl around and he would pick up pieces of lint and put them in order. And so he was very detail oriented, and he was also very obviously a deep thinker. And he was also identified pretty early as having divergent thinking, being very creative. He would, you know, make his pictures, you know, horizontal so that he could, you know, and they had a lot of detail, and then the teachers noticed that right away, that he would take an idea and take it in a whole unique direction. So he's a software engineer and a professional musician. Wow. So he's an introvert, so he does things very deeply, and he pays attention to detail, you know, very fine, subtle detail. And so whatever he applies himself to, he's very excellent at it, right? And so then our other son, he dabbled in a whole bunch of things. He was always the child who would, you know, jump in the pool and figure out how to swim later, you know? He was the class clown. He was very extroverted. He would always get people laughing. He was highly social. And then, but when he finally got hit his stride in high school, where he got into speech and debate, and he could see his incredible thinking and reasoning and ability to communicate. And so he ended up going into, he does political policy analysis.
Wow.
For a county, you know, to look at how laws are going to impact certain populations. So he does a lot of analytical thinking, and it's high level, complex, and he has to communicate it to stakeholders in very simplified terms so people can understand it. So we saw kind of him really shine. We always knew that he was good with people and funny and smart, but you know, he could really shine. And then our daughter, everybody said she should be an actress from the time she was like 3 years old, you know? And so then she studied acting, and then she decided she wanted to go into casting. She wanted to be in the studio system. So now she works in Los Angeles in the studio in a casting department. And she did a lot of, you know, acting and performing and creating and writing musicals and things like that. Wow. And but now she's more into, you know, doing the so those actually, to answer your question, some things showed up at like 6 months of age. You know, you could see a child's very social sometimes at 6 months, or not very social. And other times, you know, and they all developed their skills at different rates, you know, at different stages. So we just sort of noticed that and just encouraged, you know, whatever seemed to be most prevalent in the terms of their interests and their passions. because I guess studying psychology and developmental psychology really helped too, because I knew that they would excel in whatever they were really passionate about and interested in. So we tried to give them a lot of opportunity, explore a lot of different things, and then see whatever they kept coming back to, you know, and then encourage that.
I love that. And what stands out to me is perhaps it is your training in psychology and everything, but in whatever circumstance, like a parent who's paying that close of attention and being that observant of their children and really looking for what are the you know, signifiers that say this is what this person cares about, is invested in, and wants. And I mean, that's huge to actually have the sonar up enough to notice that kind of thing. And I don't know if that's every person's experience getting that sort of environment.
If you're enjoying I think if you're enjoying your children too, and you're just looking at them as not extensions of your ego. I mean, I think sometimes we want our children to do well, and we want to be proud of them, and we don't want them to embarrass us in public. You know, we have to teach them manners and all of these things, right? However, you know, if we can just get into the joy of this, discovering who this unique individual is, and think of them really as coming from us but not belonging to us, you know, in a sense of we don't control them, you know, they are not our little robots,
dolls, you know, to play dress up with, right? Exactly.
I mean, except for pictures. Okay, you got to do the picture thing. But when that's over,
when the Christmas card's coming out, we're all going to be dressed well. Yeah,
and they're all crying. You know, I don't want to take a picture.
Oh my goodness.
But our grandsons. It's now we have a 4 and a 2-year-old grandson, and it was really amazing because the 4-year-old's doing T-ball. And, you know, T-ball is where the ball is on the tee and they have to swing. And a lot of them can't quite hit. They're just still coordinating, right?
Right.
Well, the 2-year-old is hitting a ball off a pitch.
Whoa.
We can pitch to our 2-year-old and he's hitting them over. And we're just like, I mean,
that's wild. That's what Tiger Woods. Coordination.
Tiger Woods' dad saw it too. Yeah. Tiger Woods had a perfect golf swing at 2, and he noticed it. You know, so I think we may have a little athlete. We'll see, but he's certainly got good eye-hand coordination at 2.
I love it. That is so good. Well, Dr. Schneider, as we are wrapping up this interview, thank you so much for, you know, bringing your wisdom to bear on this conversation around home. And, you know, I feel like we got to cover some really interesting territory, everything from neuropsychology and, you know, the frazzled brain and what does it take to get out of that stressful state through breathing, to raising children and, you know, giving them musical instruments to play, everything, like just so much ground covered. I loved it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Matt.
As we're like wrapping up, in light of this conversation, do you have any recommendations, suggestions, tips for people who are listening about how they could keep a home for mental wellness?
I recommend to people every day to make stress management a part of your daily practice. So what is stress management tools? That might be taking a walk in your neighborhood, doing an exercise video at home, get outside, get some morning sun. Create a space for yourself where you can be quiet and slow down. Maybe have a morning ritual where you can have a cup of tea or coffee and contemplate the birds outside, if there are any birds outside. But, you know, have that place just for a little bit of time to self-soothe and calm down and be quiet and collect your thoughts and maybe get a little exercise. So if you can create a space in your home for that, that's great, or in your neighborhood. But I always recommend daily stress management instead of waiting until you feel stressed out to start doing stress management.
That is such a good point. Like, we can put these things into routine, like taking these breaks, taking a walk, getting sunlight in the morning, having slowness and stillness. I think that's a really important tip to offer in order to help us not get into that frazzled brain, but actually have ongoing kind of maintenance of our wellness and everything to keep that stress at bay. That's very helpful. Well, Dr. Snyder, one last question. What kinds of things are you working on these days? And if folks want to get in touch with you to connect with you for more, how could they get in touch?
Well, I'd love people to get in touch with me through frazzlebrain.com. It's frazzlebrain1word.com. And I get back to everybody if you have questions or you just want to comment or get my newsletter. You can subscribe for free. And my contact information is all there. And my social media following stuff is all there. And you could follow me on social media. I'm on Instagram and LinkedIn and Facebook. So, in terms of what I'm working on, I write for Psychology Today, so I have a blog called Frazzle Brain there, and I put out a lot of self-help and neuropsychology tips for self-soothing and ways of coping with difficult emotions. And so there's a little. I read a journal article every day, so I'm always staying fresh with current research.
That's awesome.
So I like sharing that, and then my newsletter has tips and all kinds of extra little things too.
That sounds so good. So frazzlebrain.com is a great place for people to go. I'm going to take that information, plus I'll collect your social handles, and I'm going to put those things together in a companion blog post. So if anybody who's listening to this, you want to check out in the show notes, you'll see a link to a blog post where if you want to read more about this interview, the insights that I'm finding from it as well, just follow that blog post. And that is also where you could find some of the links to the social handles as well as frazzlebrain.com. So thank you so much, Dr. Snyder. This has been another episode of Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. This is the podcast coming out of my larger business, Home Life Design Lab. Through Home Life Design Lab, we are on a mission to help 100 million people transform their quality of life at home. And that takes a multidimensional approach to how we approach our homes. So it includes things like what we just chatted about, relationships, wellness, parenting, and so on. And also things like architecture, interior design, routines, health and fitness. So I'm trying to take a very, very broad spectrum research angle on a global perspective in order to help provide some insights for how you can design your life for a life that is really great for you. If that strikes your fancy, please go to homelifedesignlab.com where you can sign up for the newsletter, check out workshops and more. And if you have enjoyed this podcast episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate it so that I can, you know, teach the algorithm to put it in front of more people. That'd be very, very meaningful for me. So thank you everybody for listening. And thank you again, Dr. Snyder, for an excellent interview.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you having me.
You're welcome. Until next time, everybody. Thanks for listening to Home Life for Extraordinary Impact. I hope you enjoyed listening as much as I enjoyed putting it together for you. Please take a moment to rate it, like it, and subscribe wherever you have listened or watched. If you really loved it, check the link in the show notes to become a premium subscriber to support the ongoing work of this project and to unlock some exclusive premium episodes. Home Life for Extraordinary Impact is a project of Home Life Design Lab. Find out more at homelifedesignlab.com, where you can sign up for the newsletter and follow along on Instagram and TikTok. Thanks.